When it comes to running an agency, probably the biggest, most important first question that comes up is how are you going to generate revenue? Where are your sales going to come from? Who is going to be your client? Now, depending on the kind of agency that you're running, there are caveats, there are nuances to the answer to that question. But for a lot of people, the first thing you do is you get started in your local area, in your network, and you move forward from there. Well, my guest today is Matt Medeiros. He's the co-founder of Slocum, an agency out of Massachusetts, and he's going to be sharing with us the story of how his agency came about, as well as some of the local circumstances surrounding it. Are you ready? Let's get into it. Welcome to Input. Matt, thank you so much for being here on Input. Why don't you start maybe by telling everybody a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there.
Sure. So I think the most relevant backstory for your audience is I grew up in the car industry. So I sold cars. My family owned a car dealership for about 45-ish years until about early 2000s when my family sold it. We were a General Motors dealership. So I have a wide-ranging experience of sales, delivering parts, cleaning cars, pulling weeds out, doing landscaping, everything that's needed to be done as a business owner in the car industry, which of course includes selling cars, especially at the dawn of consumer internet. And from there, once my family got out of the car dealership, again, early 2000s, I had gone to school, sold computers at Circuit City, just a living a life in sales and service is what I like to say. And then my father and I started a digital agency somewhere around the 2006, 2007-ish mark. Weird time because I was still had a day job as a director of product at an ISP, which is an internet service provider, where I was leading up a whole bunch of things, one of them or two of them being web hosting and the other being web design. And again, thinking back to, for those of you who have been in the game for quite a while, the early 2000s was quite an interesting period in web design in terms of tools, technologies, customer expectations, customer knowledge, all that fun stuff. We started that agency and I ran it. This agency still runs today, obviously. It's Slocum Studio, named after the Slocum River, which is where I grew up, my father grew up, and our studio is conveniently located right down the road from. And ran that with him for about a decade until, and we can talk about this later, the stresses of running an agency as I started to have children was just a little too much for me to manage at the same time. And after a decade, it was time for me to sort of move on. I still help out. And the agency still runs, but I'm not there day-to-day. Day-to-day job is with Castos as Director of Podcaster Success, helping folks get their podcasts off the ground. I run a podcast about WordPress. I do a bunch of podcasts, but that's primarily the ones that I do. And we can dive into any one of those crazy areas that you'd like to discuss.
Well, I think one of the things that you and I had talked about before we started chatting was really a little bit about your journey as an agency owner. So I wouldn't mind starting there and just sort of getting a bit of a picture of that. 10 years working in web design and WordPress, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I mean, actually, the lineage of agency, it goes a little bit beyond it. Probably about 15 years, because when I was at the ISP, we had acquired another ISP called Cape.com. So I'm in Massachusetts. There's a section of Massachusetts called Cape Cod. It's very famous for vacationing and Martha's Vineyard. A lot of presidents go there. And we acquired an agency at around probably 2005-ish, 2006-ish. They were running Drupal. And this goes back to Drupal 4 when we first took them over. So you probably just have to go on the Wayback Machine to pinpoint the year. When we acquired them, everyone looked at me and the company was like, hey, you're the guy that knows the website stuff. You do cPanel, which was revolutionary back then. Again, you have to remember the time. And they were like, hey, can you head up this web development side that we're acquiring? It runs on Drupal and figure it out. And when I befriended the designers of the new place that we took over, they were like, hey, WordPress is what we want. It's way easier, which is kind of funny because here we are, 15 years later. You wouldn't think people would have said that 15 years ago, but they certainly said that when they pitted it up against Drupal. So that's a long way of getting to, I was in the game a little bit sooner than running the agency. That's where I got a lot of the experience from, and then compounded that into, you know, running the agency with my father. And I think the story is very similar to maybe a lot of people who start agencies these days, is we start out as, I think I can do this thing called web design or web development. I think I can service at the surface of it, is I think I can service other human beings beings by helping them create a website for their business, for their cause, for their school. And I can help them put the pieces of the puzzle together because it is a technical thing. And I've got the knowledge and the know-how, and I know how to use these tools. And I'll do that at a very fair price. And I think that's where the dominoes start to fall for a lot of us. Yeah, we'll start this thing and see where it goes. And then before you know it, you're hiring people and running a business and paying insurance. And you're like, why did I get into this again?
That's very, very true. I think you've hit on where a lot of people often make their way into anything, right? You take one or two steps ahead of everybody else on a particular path, and all of a sudden you're the expert and you're the one that people are looking to. And that's really where that opportunity comes to be able to turn your expertise into a sellable service. Agencies are very interesting. And I've been doing a bit of a series here on input on what I call the five pillars of a good agency. And we've talked a little bit already to some people about leadership and leading your team. We've talked about serving clients and the importance of really creating an environment where clients are served well. And the third pillar that is where we're going to talk a little bit about, I think, is this idea of growing your revenue. So you've already mentioned a little bit this idea of, you know, getting into it, getting started, selling your services. I'm really curious to hear a little bit about your journey and how you go through this, because my experience is probably very similar to yours in that you always start undervaluing your abilities or your services or what you think is like a really great price until a couple of years later and you realize just how low you actually were. But I'm really curious to hear maybe your story about how you got started. Who were the influencers in your life that helped shape your approach to pricing and growing revenue and getting to a place where you felt like web design wasn't just a hobby or a side thing, but really was going to be a full-time business?
So my days of web design go back to the days of like Microsoft Front Page, right? I think a lot of us started off in that space perhaps. And I was dabbling, as I did with a lot of things, you know, just constantly always doing something on the side. Again, like many of us do, helping people with computers, setting up local networks, doing all that stuff and building and websites with Front Page. So I had that experience that compounded once I took this job at this company and I was in that director position, started running the agency side of it. I started to the wheels started to turn. Like there's so much you don't know of an industry. I know this sounds obvious until you get into it and you're like, oh, wow, that's what people charge. You know, so when we took over this agency, I was doing websites on the side for like a couple hundred bucks maybe. And then we took over this agency and I saw what they were billing out. And back then they were charging like $30,000 for a website, which was astronomical when you take into account inflation and world economic crises that we've been in since. And I was like, wow, there's a lot of money in this space. And now that I'm in it, I get to learn it. We didn't have a portfolio. We didn't have people knocking on our door to build websites. When my father sold the business, the car business, he was always a photographer. Like he ended up going like, you know, later in his life to school for photography, became a professional photographer. He was doing a lot of that on the side. He sold the business. He was sort of relaxing with air quotes, doing that stuff. And suddenly he took photos of a high-end jewelry maker in our area. And they're like, hey, can you do a website for me with these photos that you're taking? So he's like, I don't know, I'll ask my son. And then I built the website for them. And that was like project one that like kicked off everything that started because we were like, okay, you have the photography stuff. I know how to do a website. We both know how to sell. Let's turn this into a business. And what we did, what a lot of people will do, which I still think I'll preface this with saying there's no right way, no wrong way to start any of this. I think we should all do it how we feel our gut tells us how to go about running a business in the beginning. But we just cast a really wide net. We're like, we'll do photography, we'll do web, we'll do landing pages. Social media was just like Facebook pages was just happening to be a thing. And speaking of undervaluing, like we were selling Facebook posting for like $40 a month.
Wow.
Right. So just to show you, like we had really literally no idea what we were doing. Intentionally, we were casting this wide net because we were new. Let's just see who comes because we don't even know who our market is. We don't know what we're going to get out of this. Let's just try it. And severely undervalued our work for many years. Even when we thought we were getting smarter, we still didn't know what we didn't know on the other side of the fence. And it took us a solid, you know, 3-4 years till we were like, okay, like we have to start charging what we're worth and charging on value and just getting better at systems. So yeah, I mean, we cast a wide net, charge super cheap, and eventually learned how to charge for web projects. Mind you, we're both have sales backgrounds. So the selling aspect was never a thing. But looking back, I'm open to admit that there was a low confidence factor in that. Like, not in myself as the person selling, which I know some people have challenges with, but a low confidence in what we could offer. And as soon as we started to see over time what we were building for people, how they were using it, how it was impacting their business, by simply having a solid, fast, great WordPress site that was getting them leads and getting them donations, it really started to turn in our heads like, oh, we're building something really great for our customers. Now we have convinced ourselves and given ourselves the passage to charge a little bit more money, right? So that's like a huge 50,000 foot view of how we started to really unravel that.
Well, it's interesting. There's a couple of things that you said there that trigger things for me right away. The first thing that you said is you started out by basically throwing everything at the wall and seeing what stuck. And I think that's a really interesting approach because you're right. In the early days, you don't know what service is going to be the thing, first of all, that energizes you, that gets you excited and gets you up in the morning. And second, what you find is a good fit. You know, we talk a lot in the product space about product market fit. And I think early on in agency, there's a lot of that that happens too. You know, service market fit, trying to find that service offering or that value add you create within your experience, your education, your context to support the kinds of clients that are coming your way. I think there is a little bit of a, almost like a marriage relationship there that happens for a lot of agencies and freelancers when they get started. You know, like you're courting these prospective clients or these clients on these mini projects. And often, you know, those are those relationships that as you get good or as you get confident in your skills and abilities become those things that last for a long, long time. So that was really cool how you talked about that. But then you also mentioned niching down. So you started to, after you got through sort of that initial period, the first few years of, you know, trying to find different ideas, whether it was social media or photos or websites, to actually being able to narrow that down. What was that process like of figuring out or saying no? I always say every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to, you know, 100 things. And so saying no is actually a really important thing as well, because it frees you up to say yes to the better things. I'm curious, in your agency experience, how was that process for you of deciding, you know, this might be making me some money, but it's preventing me from making more of this money?
There's an element that I want to make sure doesn't get lost in how we got down to the part where we say no and we say yes. Coming from the car industry, I want to frame that too, because I know when somebody says, oh my God, you're a car salesman, like there's all kinds of things that maybe run through somebody's head. We were a family owned and operated for 45 years in the local area. We only had two locations. So our approach was, I mean, people that worked for us had only worked for us for, it was their only job for their entire life. Like we had people start when they were 18 and then retire, right? And just never have another job again. So it was very family oriented. It was a lot about giving back to the local community. It was not this high pressure, like we have 35 location dealerships. We were small in a market that was really large. And I say that because when we transitioned to the agency, we did what we did best at the car industry to win a customer. And one that was truth, transparency, customer service, rolling up your sleeves and getting your hands dirty, right? Like when we were selling cars, we would wash the cars. If the customer was coming to pick up the car, like the car had to be perfect. We transposed a lot of that stuff into the agency, primarily because we were doing a lot of local business, because that's all we knew. I know the world is very different now. A lot of people aren't like selling locally or doing things in person. But to frame that even further is we had a nice office space, or we still have the nice office space. My dad got out of the business, so he, you know, had some money to invest in. We bought nice couches. We put big screen TVs on the wall, coffee makers, snacks, all this stuff, art on the walls. Once we started doing more projects, we would print the websites that we made and put them on the wall. And I'm saying that because the experience was customers would walk in and they would be like, like what? This isn't just a Zoom presentation. This is, I'm coming in, I'm meeting the team, I'm sitting down, they're doing this pitch. One of the drawbacks was that the local market was certainly not ready for that elevation of website experience. Because a lot of people came in, they were like, wait, am I in the right place? Like I got $500 in my pocket. Like, is this the place that's going to build my website? So there was a little bit of mismatch of that. And how we got to niche down on like the projects we took was because it was a relentless pursuit of experience, delivery, and customer service. So it's hard for me to give somebody the advice of like saying no to projects and finding the really good ones if you don't have that same kind of persistence to be the best that you can possibly be for the customers. That was a long way to get to this, but that's what allowed us to really continue to see what worked, see what didn't, and eventually say, look at the presentation we're giving to people. Look at how we build these websites, recruiting great talent. Some of those who now work for Automattic, Jeff Galinsky, John DeRosa works for Bluehost and he contributes to WordPress.org core. They were our first two employees and just getting really, really good out of the gate to learn the lessons. Some of the lessons were harsh. We lost a lot of money on a lot of early projects, but we learned quickly and we're able to pivot quickly. And that's what got us the ability to say, we finally know our value because we had no choice. You know, 4 or 5 years in, we're like, okay, we know what we're delivering now. We know what we're about and let's only rock that out. No more, you know, I'm a bakery and I need a quick website. We started to ramp that up and say, here's the bigger projects that we're doing. And then we compounded that with reaching out to other brands that would want to invest in WordPress the way that other brands were investing already with us. Does that answer your question? I don't know, a little bit of a long one there, but does that answer that particular question?
I think it's a really good example of just some of the reality of how your experience can often shape the approach that you take to agency life. So you mentioned the fact that both you and your dad coming out of another business with a long history and bringing a lot of that experience into a new experience is great. It's probably very different to the way a lot of people start today, which is from their spare bedroom or their office at home. They're getting started for the first time. They don't have a lot of gear. You don't need an office to go out and build websites for anyone today. I think what's exciting to me about your story and how you started is I also come from a very experiential background, right? Like, so for me, creating an environment that is conducive to the type of client you want to go after, for me, that really resonates. And it translates as well, right? Like, I think it's a bit different now with the current environment that we're in, but that ability to create an environment and an experience where prospective clients and customers are walking in and you are able to shape their opinion from the moment they step foot on your property is a really big deal. We talk about that probably in design with our own clients, right? You probably would do the same thing and say, look, the website's the first place somebody's going to go to when they are doing research on your company to buy your product or service. So you want it to look good. You want it to give the kind of presentation that you are after. And the same goes for us as agencies. What's really cool as well, and I think something that is important to pick up on, is your familiarity with selling and closing. That is a massive strength that not a lot of agency owners go into it with. Right? That experience of being able to do it. My background, I did door-to-door sales. So I used to sell gas and electricity door-to-door. So you can imagine how tough that environment is. But you learn quickly about, you know, the discipline of overcoming objections, of getting past the first no, of all of these kinds of things, and of shaping the value, understanding the value of the offer that you're making, making the ask. I think so many people, when they get into this world, they do a great job on the presentation, but then they forget to ask for the business right at the end. And, you know, if you're in sales, you know, that's what you're there for. That's what you're there to do, is to get that contract, you know, make that happen. And so you came into it with a little bit of confidence there, which I think is a huge leg up. And that already gives you, you know, something that'll set you apart from a lot of the competition. And when you're in business and you're a business owner, you like somebody to ask, right? And you like it when somebody comes to you with a good pitch and then says, here's the deal, here's the value, here's the cost. You ready to sign today? Right. For me, as a business owner, I'm like, okay, now I have something to evaluate. Now I have something to negotiate on. That's awesome.
And the thing is about like confidence, sales gets a bad rap. So if anybody's like, how do I sell higher ticket projects? It's easy for me to say, be better at sales. And sales is certainly not this slimy, swarmy approach. I think it gets a bad rap is when you're trying to sell the wrong thing to the wrong person. That's when, again, like I think about the days of selling cars and I would talk to a customer and be like, can you believe that dealership down the street? They took my license and registration to copy it so I could go for a test drive and they wouldn't give me my keys back until I like, you know, negotiated a price. It's like, it's wrong. You're trying to sell the wrong, you're just forcing a car onto somebody. And the same thing with websites or any professional services is if you have the right customer in front of you, then sales is easy because you have the best solution for that customer. That's what you should be telling yourself. And quite honestly, like if you don't feel that in the fabric of your being, you're going to have a tough time, you know, selling to folks. And if you have the best solution for that person in front of you, it's easy. It just like the conversation just happens. You're just showing them what you can do to solve their immediate problems and how you can help them long-term. And it's an easy conversation to have. And then people are much more willing to do business with you. Of course, you have to deliver. It's just not just about the sales pitch. You still have to deliver. But how you prove that you deliver is your portfolio of previous work. So you bring that in, you show it off. Again, we go back to experience. Here's what I can do for you. Here's what I've done for everybody else. Here's how we're going to make it all happen. Let's work together. And that's where you really start to get that leg up.
It's interesting. I have a very interesting relationship with portfolios because I find it really challenging to show work that I've done in the past to prospective clients only because, number one, once I hand off, it does not look the way that I designed it. And number two is that it looks out of date really quick. So what is it about a portfolio do you think that actually inspires confidence in a prospective client? Why is that such a valuable piece of kit, if you will, to bring into a presentation?
So my grandfather started the car dealership back in the late 70s. It was one of the very first Mazda dealerships in the country. He was selling used cars prior to that, and then Mazda came into the country, and he was one of the first, at least in the Northeast. Prior to that, he was selling tires. And he would always famously tell a story that he would go to, now this is way back, so this is like 60s, 50s. He would go to a used car dealership and be like, hey, this guy down the street just bought a dozen tires from me. He didn't buy the tires yet. He was just thinking about it. And then he goes, well, he bought it. Well, if he's buying them, then I got to buy them, right? So he would drum up that excitement with these folks selling tires. And a portfolio is a little bit of that. And if you're working within the same niche, maybe the same industries, and these are brands, like you're only going to want to show off something to a client potentially that makes them go, ooh, okay, yes, I want to be like them. I either recognize that name, or you know, if you're selling websites to lawyers, God bless you. And if you show off a firm, right, you show a firm that you know is kind of revered in the space and the area, and then a new lawyer comes into the game, hey, knocking your door, and be like, oh, well, this law firm did it, and they go, ooh, okay, well, if they're doing it with you, I think there's like that social proof, I guess, is what we marketers might call it. What I did is talk much more about the plumbing or the architecture or the approach of the project and how we built it versus showing them the website. Yeah, sure, we showed them the mockups that we had originally done before the client went in and started punching in all their content and their oversized pixelated images. But we showed them the good stuff first. But it was much more about how we approached it and the particular problem that we solved for that client, not just the fancy side of it when we could. The portfolio doesn't always seal the deal, but it certainly gets it done. And even in the enterprise space, like at Castos, it's a huge thing. People still ask, what other podcast do you host? As if it matters. Because it doesn't really matter. It's just like we can deliver any podcast to the world. It doesn't matter if it's somebody that gets a million downloads a month or 10. Like it's all the same thing. It's just a little bit more episodes that go out. So people look for it. It's not always going to win it, but it certainly does help, you know, when we can.
It's interesting talking about lawyers. That's exactly the example that I had in my head because I've had this happen with lawyers. We found a client or a lawyer found us from North Carolina, and all of a sudden we got like 5 or 6 calls from other lawyers in the same area who were all competing with each other. And I guess because they had done a good job on their website, these others wanted to do it too. And so there is a little bit of that social proof that you can tap into when you're trying to grow your revenue to actually leverage an existing client in their project to get other people and maybe their competitors. That's a little sticky sometimes when you have that, but it's a lot of fun. Well, interestingly enough, one of the other things that you've done as you've talked about this agency and what we talked about as well was not just sticking in one lane or one type of revenue, but actually figuring out how to jump out and find other streams of revenue. I know for me, and when I was doing the agency world, it used to be that you would do this fixed price project or you would do a value-based pricing on a project. But once the project was done, that was the end of the relationship with the client. And you might get a call or two every now and then, but maybe not. And I can remember the transition that a lot of us did in our thinking of going, well, they're going to need hosting, they're going to need maintenance, they're going to need, you know, ongoing care, and they can do that or they can hire it out to us at a monthly price. And now that one-time fixed price or value-based pricing relationship has become something longer term. I've increased revenue. I've done it that way. And so I'm curious to hear from you and your experiences. How did you take these relationships that you were building and this agency you were building and figure out how to branch out and actually generate revenue in other ways?
So two quick points. One, it's easy for me to say like maintenance plans, especially coming from, again, a car guy who sold extended warranties, which by the way, worked. Fun fact, if you're going to buy a car, you can negotiate the warranty cost as well. And then I also sold warranties when I was selling computers at Circuit City. So maintenance plans, like you just said, the hosting side of it, the maintenance side of it, all of that stuff is the easy win. As somebody who came from the hosting space, I knew how to sustain, let's say, a fleet of servers so that I wouldn't leave money on the table. And on a more serious note, hosting for agencies, I know it gets a bad rap, probably just like car sales, but the customer wants a point of contact. They want you to solve the problem. So I know people say, well, hand it off to somebody else, pick your favorite web host out there and let them handle it. And that's a fine approach to it. I know that from, especially if you did a lot of business in the local space like we did, somebody's just going to want to knock on your door, call your cell phone and say, hey man, website's down. I can't tell them to call the hotline at our favorite managed WordPress host, because they don't want to deal with that. They don't even know what to say for most of these customers. So it's fair game for you to host your customer's website and price it at a point where they find the value in giving you a call. If they're on a $10 a month hosting plan and you want to charge them $200 and they find value in that to call you and say, what's up? Do it. On the hosting side, certainly taking that money. The other thing that we ramped up to really quickly, well, an unfair advantage, just as the short side story here, the unfair advantage that we also did, speaking about like really broadening our revenue streams, is we said, how are we going to get, because you got to remember the time that we were building websites. People still don't have websites. Back then, people are still playing catch up. We were like, how are we going to get our digital products in front of these small businesses? So we have a fairly tourist-centric area of Massachusetts that we live in. So we built a printed tourism guide that was the size of like a real estate book for those of you maybe in, I don't know if you have these in Canada, but they're small little pamphlet size books. And at the time, that was before everything was digital. So we were printing this printed tourism guide and selling traditional printed ads in this book, because that's what people still understood in the local space. So we would make money with a printed guide, not a lot, but enough to break even and or make a little bit of a profit, and then say, oh, by the way, we do digital stuff too. Don't you want to get a website? Don't you want your presence to be a little bit better online? So that was our sort of unfair advantage in the local market space. I know a lot of people can't do that these days, but that's what we did. And then third, what we look to is, and this came later on as we got more experience in the space, when we did things with like WordPress plugins and started getting a little bit more focused on our development skills versus our design skills, which is a lesson to be had by anybody. We started looking for projects that were much more retainer-based, because they're only as good as your last project. So yeah, you can go out and sell a $20,000 project as we started to get more into, but a lot of effort, a lot of work, a lot of energy has to be spent to land this, do the work, deliver it, and then get that person on a support plan. We were like, let's try to find customers that want to hire us more long-term, even if that means sort of white labeling our work, which we did early days. We helped TenUp when Jake was just starting, Jake Goldman, CEO of TenUp, when he was just starting his agency. We actually helped build his first iteration of TechCrunch. I don't know how many times he's done it over, but we were white labeling with him in the very, very early days. That was really what took us to the next level, is finding clients that want us to be their in-house WordPress person, dial back the cost for them just enough to keep us on retainer so that they don't say, well, we'll pay thousands of dollars a year to you for this retainer versus us going out and spending 150 grand on an employee. We'll just keep you on the retainer. So that's really what has grown the business since.
Great. And I think what you said makes a ton of sense. I wholeheartedly agree with all of it. And I think for a lot of people, it's the natural path you'll take, right? You'll start with one-off projects, undervaluing your time at an hourly rate. Then you'll go, why am I charging hourly for this? I've got a limited amount of hours that I can bill for if I do that. So if I go project-based, then I increase the amount of, you know, revenue I can earn from that. And then from there to value-based, why am I doing what I think this is worth when you're going to make X amount of money on it. So we're going to do that. And then diversifying where your revenue comes from. So looking at, I'm just summarizing now, but looking at your maintenance, your hosting, all of that kind of stuff, absolutely. I also look at it as maintaining your connection to customers beyond that initial main project that you do, and also having a built-in audience for any new idea that you have or any new way you want to try and generate revenue. So you talked about the print ads, right? And if you are much more locally focused and, you know, geographically present, then being able to take all of the website customers that you've been working with and building relationships with and saying, hey, we're doing this print thing, do you want in? Often they'll be your easiest sells and will get you most of the way there before you have to go out and fill it up and generate more. And so I think that absolutely doing that and building those kinds of relationships, that's going to help you not only create revenue, but create sustainable revenue for the long term. One of the things I learned later on in my own business life is the value of runway, the value not just of going project to project and week to week and month to month sometimes, but actually being able to build out a revenue stream that you don't have yet, but you know will come because you have a contract or you have a relationship or you have a service that you're providing. That is incredibly securing and safety generating as an independent, as a solopreneur, but also as an agency when you've got other people that you're paying or, you know, staff that you want to keep on good relationship with for the next big project. Like, yeah, being able to do that's really, really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, and it takes time. Like, God, I love everyone who teaches people how to make money with websites and stuff like that. Like, it is a skill set that, and one of the reasons why I love WordPress is because it can empower somebody to totally shift careers, totally open up a whole new opportunity, technical opportunity, code-wise, support, customer service, sales, marketing. It just thrusts somebody into so many different categories if they so choose to take on that adventure and really open up opportunity. The flip side is the places that do teach people this stuff sometimes just paints the picture a little too easy. Like, throw in some automation, take this script and put the $5,000 number there and then double it next year is a little too easy. It's nice. It gives you some structure. It gives you some guidelines. But so much of this stuff is a people problem. Knowing who you're going to serve, how you're going to get to them, and then how does your team operate? It is a big thing that has to be cohesive and really fine-tuned, and it takes time. So you have to be able to sustain that journey to get to that point.
So agency life is mostly over for you now, as you mentioned off the top in introducing yourself. You are now at Castos, as well as doing a number of your own content things. So I'm eager to hear a little bit about where you're at now, what you're doing, and why.
Yeah, so the podcasting journey actually was born from the agency life. What I quickly realized in the WordPress world that, again, when you think way back to 2006, 2007, I was at a local meetup with Jake in Providence and a bunch of other WordPress folks, Jay Tripp, John James Jacoby, a bunch of other people, Jesse Friedman. They were all part of this WordCamp, this local WordPress meetup. And when I saw how fast Jake was growing his agency at the time, I was like, as like any agency owner does, you know, how do I reverse engineer that? And it's literally impossible to reverse engineer Jake Goldman. But you look at what he was doing. And quickly, I saw he had connections in the WordPress space. He was an engineer at heart, which I knew I couldn't do. That was not me. You know, and he already knew the agency world. He was coming from another agency called Oomph. And I said, okay, well, two of those things I can kind of figure out, not the coding part. And I need to build community. I need to build connection. And I went to a couple WordCamps. I just saw the energy. And I was listening to a podcast called Mixergy at the time, still do. I was like, maybe I'll become like the Mixergy of WordPress. And at first I thought I was going to do a blog and just blog about it. And then I was like, I'll just do this podcasting thing. And that's really what ramped me up. And I actually used the podcast early days to sell against bigger agencies, because as my WordPress podcast was getting popular, I was getting all these ratings and reviews on iTunes, quickly became one of the highest rated on iTunes. And then I could use that as sales collateral to say, look, when people would say, well, you don't do these big projects, or I've never really heard about your agency before. Like, do you really know WordPress? I could show off the social proof proof of my podcast and be like, hey, this is just another notch in the sales belt. What do you think? If you like what I say in these podcasts, you might like doing business with me. So that's how it all started. Yeah, and I still cover WordPress entrepreneurship stuff to this day over on Matt Report, broadening the scope a little bit now to no code tools and SaaS, because I think it's a great intersection of the resilient business builder. People are using all kinds of tools these days. It's not just WordPress, as popular as WordPress is. And then I do a show called the WP Minute, which is a 5-minute weekly recap of WordPress news. And then I'm also building a local podcast called Southcoast.fm. It covers just my South Coast area, as if those podcasts weren't enough. And that's to build some kind of legacy locally. Now that I don't do the agency work day to day, having grown up in a community where people knew my grandfather and his brothers and my father and his brothers, I wanted something locally that could have that network effect for my own kids, which I know sounds hilarious. Like, that's kind of foolish. You're starting a podcast for your kids. Like, I will be podcasting at least for the next 18 years until my kids are done with whatever they do after high school, as an opportunity to lead them into other places, right? As my father did for me with the dealership and stuff like that, got me a lot of jobs after high school and connections and stuff like that. So looking to pay that forward. And then at Castos, I get paid to do what I love, which is podcasting and running their podcast, the Audience Podcast, and helping Castos customers start a podcast. Everything from microphones to storytelling to marketing and promotion sort of takes everything I do and have done for the last decade in content and get paid for it.
That's awesome.
And, you know, just like you, James, like, this world of business owners, like, looking at, we need to have a media presence. We need to invest in content and invest in great content. You know, I think that's for you folks like you and I. You know, we're starting to round that corner, like, okay, yeah, see, we are popular again. Like, you will want to invest in us. That's the day to day.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Matt, for being on the show. It's been fun to hang out and hear a little bit of your story and talk a little bit about agency life. I'm sure you had to rack your brain and go back into the vault a little bit for some of it, but I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
There's a lot of really interesting things that Matt talked about that I think apply to all agency owners, whether you are coming from a multi-generational business like a car dealership or you're just getting started. The first is when Matt talked about the importance of creating the right environment. Remember, he talked a little bit about how when they opened up their agency office, it was an experience where their prospective clients would come in and be a little bit surprised and wondering if they were even in the right spot. Imagine what you can do in your environment. Now, lots of us can't actually meet face-to-face with our clients, but how do you present yourself on a Zoom call? What kind of camera are you using? What kind of microphone are you using? How can you leverage technology and different assets that you might have access to in order to be able to create the kind of experience that levels it up for your prospective clients? Another thing that Matt said that I thought was really interesting was the power of social proof. Now, I hesitate because I know when I give a project to a client, that's the last time it will ever look the way that I intended it. But there are some opportunities there for us to think through what kind of social proof can we hold on to, can we bring to the table, whether that's testimonials or examples of websites that we've built or whatever that we can showcase or bring to prospective clients to help them build trust with us. And the third and last thing that I think Matt talked about that is really important for us is to think about the location that we are in or the target audience that we are going after and look for opportunities to get in front of that audience in a value-added way that maybe might not seem quite so obvious at first. For Matt, he was very clear, Massachusetts, Cape Cod, that was the area that they were focused on. So they looked for other opportunities to create exposure for their existing clients and their prospective clients as well. Something that would add additional value or create a new gateway, a new opening for prospective clients to find out about them and get into their business. So there's a couple of things there for you to think about as you go about looking to grow your revenue. I also think diversifying your income streams is really cool as well. So looking for opportunities, not just in the initial project, but in your maintenance projects and all those other things, lots of great opportunities to grow revenue. Now, I want to hear what you think, because we've really just scratched the surface here of different ways that you can grow revenue or create an environment to grow revenue for your agency. So what do you think? Go ahead, leave a comment, let me know. Also, if you like this video and you like what we're doing here at Input, please go ahead and subscribe, like this video. We'd love to have you along for the journey. Well, that's it from me. We'll see you next time.